If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Took a little pause before the nine at Deep Space Nine.
You forgot which Deep Space we were talking about?
I like to insert a little pregnancy into my pauses.
The great Deep Spaces.
Yeah.
Adam, one thing that we talk about often when we get together IRL, when we're on tour or just visiting with each other or whatever, is what a refresher it can be after sometimes weeks apart to be with somebody that is as interested in doing bits on the other as you and I are. Because, you know, we go through life interacting with people in a professional context, sometimes with our wives, sometimes with other friends that don't want us to just try bits at them nonstop.
It's tough when you do bit when it is not appropriate to do bit.
Yeah, and so I don't know if this is like a recurring segment or just something to talk about today, but
we should do it with a drop and everything.
Yeah, and it's basically when always doing bits goes bad.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment.
The origin of the phrase always doing bits, of course, is a very painful memory for me that, you know, it dovetails nicely with the, like, sort of semi-embarrassed feeling that we sometimes talk about with regard to publicly being a fan of Star Trek, which is that after college, I had several circumstances aligned in my life that I found myself hanging out with stand-up comedians quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a house party with a bunch of stand-up comedians standing around in a circle with, you know, everybody with a beer in their hand and, you know, having a chat with a group of people. And I guess, like, the structure of what I was saying to these people came across as prepared material. And so one of them, you know, from across the circle said, "Ben, you should be a stand-up. You're always doing bits." And I think he was busting my chops in a nice way, but it was very embarrassing to me to have been called on the carpet in that way.
Well, Hannibal Buress doesn't pull any punches.
he may actually have been at that party. Like, no joke. That's the kind of, like, there are definitely
people.
That's
the level that you were partying at. Wow.
Well, the thing is, it didn't feel like a level at the time because nobody at this party was famous then. But some of the people that were at that party are now famous.
Right.
So I have a couple of examples of times when I was doing bits, like, kind of in a knee-jerk way so the first one is when we were just on tour in Canada. We had a great time in Canada.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happens when you take a bunch of tour merch into Canada is that you have to declare it. So I wrote down on my customs declaration form that I had the tour merch with me. You did not have the tour merch with you. I had the tour merch with me, so I wrote it down on my form. And at a certain point in the going through, you know, the gauntlet of guys you have to show your passport to on the way out of the airport, I got sent right and you got sent left, and I had to go explain why I ticked that box on the thing.
Right.
And I was assuming that they were going to toss my suitcase and look at everything and ask me a bunch of probing questions. I've seen your Canadian border guards reality show before.
Sure.
But the guy just asked me like what we were doing, one of the most high stakes scenarios in which I'm asked to explain why what the hell is going on, and it's like, I have a Star Trek podcast, we are playing a couple of live shows, I have some posters, challenge coins, etc. in and amongst my luggage. And it was very nice about it, nicer than he needed to be, and he said, this is sort of at each border guard's discretion. Technically, we can charge you some duty for the merchandise you're bringing into our country, but I'm not going to charge you that today. And every fiber of my being was devoted to preventing me from saying, thanks for not being a duty head.
All I do is
bits,
no matter what.
As I left the customs area. And I fortunately managed to resist the urge.
You should have rightfully been arrested had you said something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Comedy prison is where they should have sent you.
Well, so here's one where I actually committed the crime and should have been sent to comedy prison. There's a hamburger sandwich chain that is taking the United States by storm called Shake Shack. And there's one not terribly far from the therapist's office that I was going to downtown. And I just kind of made my, I would build my day around getting Shake Shack and then going to therapy.
Hard to tell which is more helpful, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And I was putting in my order, and the order was like a double Shack burger. So a two patty cheeseburger, French fries, and a strawberry milkshake. And she asked, the lady working the till asked me if I wanted whipped cream on my milkshake. And I said, no, I'm trying to watch my figure.
All I do is
bits,
no matter what.
And as the words were exiting my mouth, I was like, I am such a bozo. Like, how many times a day does somebody do this bit on her? And yet, Adam, she doubled over with laughter. She did full bend at the waist, like back away from the register because her head would have hit it. Laugh at that. Like, I got such a big pop for that joke.
And undeservedly also, that's great customer service by the Shake Shack
I know.
Counter person.
I know.
You did not deserve that.
I didn't. I mean, it's like when I was a back waiter at a restaurant, I would occasionally ask people if they wanted me to box up their leftovers when I found a table full of people that had cleaned their plates.
All I do is
bits,
no matter what.
I didn't realize at the time what a hack I was.
Do you want some help with that, Ben?
I mean, I realized later, I feel like I've grown somewhat, but apparently not enough. So I don't know. Do you have any recent examples of times where wanting to always do bits kind of backfired for you?
Actually, this just happened a couple of hours ago. I told you this off mic, but I went to go turn in my badge and my laptop and my camera and a bunch of other stuff to the place where I worked for the last 5 years, having had my contract not renewed. And so I made the call. Like, they were like, hey, whenever you're in town, come drop it off. Because that's, I guess, the level of seriousness they're treating the idea of me having a corporate badge and a bunch of their materiel. They're like, yeah, I mean, whenever you're nearby, go ahead and drop in.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Like, but anyway, I give them a call and I'm like, hey, I'm actually down here. We had just wrapped recording another hit episode of the Friendly Fire podcast. And I rolled up and I'm in the parking lot and I've got the camera bag and all the stuff laid out outside of my car. The coworker comes up and he's like, hey, we've got some some hard drives of yours. So there's like the awkward exchange of things after a breakup. And I go, yeah, I was really happy to have pulled up to the workplace and not seen like all of my clothes thrown out the top story window into the yard here. And he looks at me like, what?
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
And I was like, yeah, I thought about like holding a boombox over my head and playing you a Peter Gabriel song to take me back.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
And he, again, like two swings, two misses. And I'm like, all right, well, thanks for meeting me. like, I, you feel like, and this is a currency that we exchange all the time on this show, the currency of reference.
Right.
And this is a man of a certain age who I feel like watched movies in the 80s.
Yeah.
He did not get these references at all to what I thought were pretty benign, like, breakup metaphors.
Yeah.
Jeez. He just, like, great guy, like, lovely guy, not the guy who chose not to renew my contract, but he was like, yeah, cool. Great working with you, man. Like, you're going to be missed. Like, sturdy handshake. And that was it. And I totally left that situation feeling like you, like, yeah, like, bit unwelcome.
Yeah.
Bad bit moment.
Bad bit moment. And I think that the moral of the story basically is just that we're ruining each other for the rest of the world. Do you want to re-enter the warm embrace of our podcast? The yeah. place where it is safe to do bits.
I like this new segment. I hope we keep doing it.
I do too.
Hard to agree. Well, Ben, speaking of innocent bystanders, I think there are several in the season 2 episode of Deep Space Nine called Defiant.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Your Major Kira, she is having a rough day. A very stressful day. DS9 is pushing its storage capacity, apparently, and there's just she's really slammed. Like she's slammed at work. She's taken work on from Dax and now from Bashir. She's got to go down to the infirmary, and she kind of blows up at Bashir.
You can't have a runabout. You cannot get your medical supplies, and I don't give a damn about the colonization schedule.
And he turns around and medical big dogs her in a way that would really, you know, be satisfying for Dr. Crusher. Because Dr. Crusher was a past master of this move.
Captain Picard, you are now relieved of duty. I judge you to be disabled and mentally incapacitated.
While there is a chain of command, I have a special place within but also slightly outside of it where I'm going to order you to chill the fuck out. And there's nobody that can override that.
A hot milk toddy? You're kidding.
I feel disappointed that our perfect future is riddled with instances of people overworking.
I know. Yeah,
what
that's
is that
really
about?
True. So Kira is not in Starfleet, and Kira is in a sort of capitalist society. So maybe that's always a symptom of capitalism in the conjecture of your Star Trek writer's room.
I do also feel that overwork can many times be self-motivated, like that's just a personality type also.
Sure.
And
yeah.
It's plausible that Kira would be someone with that personality.
Well, the prescription that Dr. Bashir prescribes Kira is that he takes her to Quark's and puts a series of objects in front of her. One of which is a holosuite key, which, based on the last episode, is kind of an attack, right?
Yeah. Not good. Kind of a short memory there, Doc.
Yeah.
It's kind of the fun version of the wrench, belt, stick decision from Good Will Hunting, right?
Why the wrench? Because fuck him. That's why.
It's drink, holosuite, Jumja stick, and gambling tokens. What would you pick of those things?
I mean, one of the things about me that disgusts you is my enjoyment of gambling. So you know I'm taking those tokens.
I'm not judgmental of other people liking gambling. I just don't like it.
It's breathtaking how non-judgmental you are, actually. When you're so non-judgmental that I judge myself for you. Like, you were so cool about our time in Vegas. Like, I every time I went to gamble and then you like disappeared to go have your own good time, I was like, oh, I did bad. Like, we could have been spending time together.
No, you had a great time in Vegas, and I also had a great time in Vegas.
Good, great times.
Yeah.
What would you have picked?
See, I think I would put Holosuite as one of my things and probably Blue Drink as the other.
Sure.
I like a blue drink, and I would be very curious to try a Holosuite at the very least. But Kira recently essentially had a Holosuite-involved sexual assault experience, and that is a totally fucked up thing for there to be in the cold open of the next episode.
Yeah, the proximity to that episode is offensive, really.
It's fucked up.
One thing that seems to be on offer here that is not on the table is actually...
There's a fifth thing, Adam.
It's next to the table, Ben, and it's leaning up against the wall.
Looks like you've got your evening all planned.
As it does.
Hope you've got room for the unexpected.
It is one Riker William T., from all appearances.
I had a smile as big as Will Riker's, just seeing him. Just utter joy to see the man back on screen.
Seriously, just fills the frame with his charisma and, you know, draws a line under something that we've talked about quite a bit, which is meeting up with Kira Nerys in a bar would be a very exciting thing for a gentleman to do.
Yeah, and yet, like, if there's one lady in a bar that is too much of a match for Will Riker, it is Kira.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is being Riker on hard mode.
This episode was so much fun to me.
Yeah.
I just love Jonathan Frakes as a Riker.
He's great. He's so fucking great.
Very plausible backstory here. He's going to Risa by way of DS9 and just dropping in.
Did you hear that he built up 3 months of leave?
And Dr. Crusher finally insisted that I take some of it. She nearly shoved me out of the airlock.
What are they going to do on the D? What if the Borgs attack? Like, what then?
There's a fair amount of that thing that I've always wanted to feel, which is like the idea of walking into a room and knowing that someone somewhere in that room is going, holy shit, that's Adam Pranica. Like, several times in this episode, people are going, holy shit, that's Will Riker, the Will Riker.
Yeah.
And it made me think, like, there's a scene early on where it's Commander Riker and Commander Sisko in the same room.
Yeah, and they kind of drop the ranks, like it's call me Ben, call me Will.
They have to do that, right?
Yeah.
Because I think everyone in that room knows that is the William Riker, and while commanders may be equal, like the commander of the D.
Yeah. Big deal.
Yeah.
They also have, like, big commander energy appears to be a thing. Just based on this scene alone, like, they're having such a fun time just, like, chopping it up with each other, like Sisko's tossing the ball back and forth in his hands, like, they're talking about getting big paydays off Quark.
You know where I think Riker's getting some of his energy, Ben? It's the placement of his comm badge.
Yeah.
It looks a little lower than it was on TNG. He's got some Cal Hudson energy.
Yeah. I guess when they went to the squared off gold part of the comm badge, Riker proportionally knew you want to put that like a tad bit lower than the oval-shaped comm badge.
I mean, when Jay Frakes is in the Star Wagon, I think he probably popped in a couple VHS tapes of some DS9 to catch himself up. Maybe those are the Cal Hudson episodes.
What are the other commanders visiting the station rocking? And Cal Hudson is the answer to that question.
Hey, you got to do your research. By reputation, everyone knows who Commander Riker is. Mm-hmm. He seems to know Major Kira.
Yeah. At least by reputation. And he has a rep too. Like the conversation between Sisko and Riker is cut against Dax and Kira having essentially like mid-work girl talk about the fact that Kira is a bit sprung off Riker.
He's a warm, charming man.
Dax is kind of sprung on him too.
He's quite a dabble player.
Yeah. And they're not jealous of each other for that. One thing that struck me about this scene, though, is that Kira is just back at work. Like, did she just get an afternoon off? She was worked to the bone. Why does she only get one afternoon off?
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Seems fucked up.
It seems like she's spending her off time kicking it with Will Riker. And, yeah. I mean, for a variety of reasons, that sounds like as much of a fun time hang as anything that was put down on her table at Quark's, right? I think Riker's got the jum-jaw stick beat.
So after work, Kira is given him the walk around. Like, they bump into each other on the promenade, and he gets to get the grand tour. And he's particularly interested in the Defiant. And so they go down to the Defiant, and this is a really fun little segment here, like the security to get onto the Defiant. Like, yeah. One thing I talked about in a recent episode is, like, why aren't we seeing more Federation tech kind of grafted into the Cardassian architecture of the station?
Right.
And this happens. The airlock to get onto the Defiant has a very obviously, like, Elkar's Enterprise-looking computer interface outside of it. And that's the thing you need to convince you're the right person to get into the Defiant. And it's backed up by a George Primin Lieutenant Toast type who just has to stand guard there.
Got a little security toast back there.
Yeah, well, a little touch of toast.
Will Riker, I mean, I'm going to call him Will until he's not anymore.
Uh-huh.
He's a character who is led around by his head a lot when he walks.
Yeah.
And so you almost lose the idea of his paranoia here, because he does look around a little sketchily in the moments leading up to his boarding the Defiant that I think you would shrug off as, like, that's just how Will Riker walks around and looks at things.
Yeah, they don't tip their hand in this episode that much. The first thing that happens when they get on the Defiant is they bump into Chief O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Under some computer panel wrenching on something, and he gets up and is, like, pretty happy to see the commander and gets the chilly dust off from Riker.
It's so chilling, it's withering. Like, you never see this character do this to anyone that's not a mortal enemy.
Yeah.
And this plays with expectations really well, right? Because you're expecting a great reunion between two beloved TNG characters.
Right.
And you so do not get that.
I was really surprised that this was never explained or expanded upon or paid off in any way.
It feels like so deeply hurtful that O'Brien should have brought it up at some point later as something that happened.
Yeah, like, my reaction to one of these is definitely what O'Brien's reaction is, which is just like, you know, if I have an awkward interaction or if somebody is, like, extremely mean or rude to me, I almost never, like, come back over the top with more. I just kind of, like, shrink and disappear. But then the next thing I do is go complain about it to everybody I know, you know? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I beat him at fucking poker one time and he's made me his lifelong enemy. Are you kidding me? You know, like, whatever the thing is.
The idea that it would be a Thomas Riker strategy to, whenever confronted by a familiar, to either, like, play it as, okay, cool, great to see you, gotta go, like he does with Dax in right. Ops. Or, like, go hard the other way, which is, I don't want to talk to you, you fucking asshole, the way he does with with O'Brien. I feel like he's kind of running a script. Like, there's only a right. couple of ways that this could go if I'm made. And so I need to, like, end these conversations quickly so I'm not found out.
Well, like, how perfect is it? Like, the person he is impersonating can plausibly be claimed to have been drunk the last time you saw him every single time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he tells Dax, like, oh, that night was such a blur.
Yeah. It is great.
Yeah.
And because Tom Riker has access to ostensibly all of William Riker's logs and stuff, like, this is research that I feel like headcanon-wise could have been done. Like, he is utterly prepared for this impersonation.
Yeah, like, nothing that has happened so far makes us think this isn't Riker, even though, like, he big-dugs Chief O'Brien in that in that awful way.
Even the moment that he phasers Kira, you're like, oh, okay.
Why
like,
did he do that?
All right, Will Riker, like, you're Will Riker. You must have your reasons.
Yeah, like, oh, fuck, is this going to be an episode about how Kira is, like, actually bad and working for somebody bad, and Starfleet had to send somebody to dispatch her with extreme prejudice?
That's what seven seasons of credibility does for you. Like, you're on Riker's side, and they fucking manipulate you with that in a great way.
Only when the Maquis beam over do we realize that something bad is happening. And he blows in a call to ops and says, like, oh, there's a bad, some kind of bad engine thing happening on the Defiant. I'm going to get her away from the station so she doesn't take the habitat ring out. And you can thank me later. And they've stage directed this a little bit. They've got something steaming it up in the background of his FaceTime shot. And the second the Defiant is pulled away from the station, it's like shields up and goes to warp. So they are not able to beam anybody off of it. And it's Riker and a couple of Maquis with an unconscious Kira and the most bristling with weapons ship in the sector heading away at high warp.
It's the beginning of one of my favorite storylines. The idea that a ship could be stolen and driven away is so fun.
And like the next thing that happens is that meeting with Dukat where it's, you know, it's just like the Russian ambassador meeting with the Secretary of State in Red October going like, don't you see like how inherently dangerous it is to have Starfleet and the Cardassians and the Maquis and the Defiant out there just like rubbing paint, you know?
That Hunt for Red October comparison is so perfect, Ben. It's like Hunt for Red October if Ramius was actually out to start the war, right?
Right. Yeah. It's not a direct comparison, but a lot of the premises are similar.
I mean, it remains to be seen if the Cardassians take a dump without a plan. This scene is interesting because this is the second time in a row that Dukat's come to DS9 and just gotten his junk kicked in. Like, he's not on a good streak here because what Sisko lays on him is that like the ship has been stolen. That's a big problem, and this could be a war-making conflict.
The Cardassians are so, they have so much guile. Everything about ascending to a high rank in Cardassia is about, performing this fealty to the state, but also working very much toward your own ends. And it has this interesting effect that they never believe Starfleet people when they're just like, hey, there's a big problem. Here are all of the factors about the problem that we currently know. We would like to solve it with you. We would like to work together to solve it. They're like, what's your angle? What are you working toward? Like, how is this a trick against me? That's really fun. Like, I like that that's always a problem that they go through. And like, there's just like no bridging that divide because it's like a difference of culture, you know?
Right, right. It's a really great scene, and it's one of the crucial scenes, and it's strange that Will or Tom Riker is not in it. Because Dukat's making the case that, you know, no one is going to believe this story. It's super far-fetched. Like, it's fucking hilarious. You're telling me a transporter accident made another Riker, and then, like, that's who's commanding this ship? Fuck you. But Sisko is like, you know what? If collateral is what you need, like, take me. Take me with you to Cardassia Prime, and we'll work this out in your war room. And Dukat's like, you don't understand. Like, I want to destroy the ship. I want to destroy. I do not want to take and study. It's sort of like a Ripley and Aliens scenario. And they're on opposing sides of that argument too, but Sisko feels like by virtue of his presence there, he could do something actionable and save the ship.
I mean, Sisko's first goal is to prevent this snowballing into a situation that kills a bunch of colonists or provokes a war. Like, if he can save the ship, that's cool, but the main goal is to not let whatever horrible thing the Maquis have planned actually go down. And to really underline how horrible this is going to be, we get a shot of Riker peeling the sideburns of his beard off to reveal a really nasty mid-90s slash Mirror Universe goatee.
He reaches below the frame and pulls out just an astonishing amount of pubes. Tom Riker keeps it tight.
I had to put these on just in case. I had to wear this Merkin for full believability.
You don't understand, man. I had to get it on.
What are you doing now?
Kira is put in a really interesting position here because, like, her natural affinity is always going to be for fuck with the Cardassians. She is naturally politically aligned to your average Maquis in a lot of ways.
And Tom Riker appeals to her resistance fighter experience to sort of, like, get in with her, which I think is really shrewd.
You were a resistance fighter. You know that certain times you do things that you're not proud of to accomplish the mission.
She does not respond to it well.
You accomplished your mission, so now what?
She has really come to a position of, like, there is a right and a wrong way to fight this fight, and what you are doing is fucking wrong. It's R-O-N-G.
Kira is a nightmare as a hostage. You know?
Yeah.
Like, Tom Riker does not know with whom he is fucking at this point.
No. Yeah, it's really, like, akin to us underestimating a Rolaren. And yeah. You would think, well, I guess Tom Riker wouldn't have any, he doesn't know from Rolaren. Only Will Riker knows what that's about.
I mean, if your job involved impersonating Will Riker, I suppose watching every episode of TNG would be part of his study, right?
I mean, we know that Will Riker is given to watching previously on TNG reels. So
maybe that's one thing they have in common.
Yeah. I mean, they're the same. Everything is the same about them, right? Like, epigenetically, they split 5 years ago, but otherwise, they're identical.
I mean, you can make a choice with your body hair.
Yeah, and Will Riker chooses to go full bush. Tom Riker's a clean-shaven man. Keeps that manscape high and tight.
Just a quick and easy number one on the guard.
I mean, it's why when they wear a neck-revealing garment, Will Riker always has quite a bit more volume in that department.
It goes a little bit uncommented on, but I think it's fucking great that one of the Maquis that beams aboard is from the TNG Maquis episode. That's Kalita, the lady.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah, like, she's back from that Rolaren episode.
She looked really familiar to me, but I didn't look it up. That's really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the other guy, Tamal, is like a first-timer, but mm-hmm. It was cool to have that kind of continuity.
I love a tamale.
I don't know if I've ever had a good tamale.
What?
I feel like the corn is too thick, man. Like, it's too... like, there's too much of that. The meal. It's so mealy. Give me more of that stuffing.
I don't think that there are that many good restaurant tamales. Like, tamales are really like a folk art. And properly, like, what you want to... if you're buying a tamale out somewhere to eat, you want to be buying it out of, like, an igloo cooler from a lady that came into the bar that you're at,
yeah.
And she's got some dope-ass tamales that she made.
Yeah.
Because, like, the right way to make a tamale is, like, you get together with your family and, like...
you make a grip of tamales.
Yeah, like, and it's... because it's a big, like, it's a huge process, you know? You got to make the masa, and you got to, like, it's like a friend of Mexican descent from my childhood who... invited me over to his house at Christmas time a couple of times for the tamale making process. And
oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's like everybody's sitting around a big table and you got your corn husks and your bowl of masa and there's fillings and it's like it's a huge process. Everybody takes part. Like, you wind up going home with 400 tamales and then the freezer is like packed with them for the rest of the year.
And wow.
That's like properly done. But I will tend to agree that, like, in a restaurant, you're getting, like, they're too big, for one thing. Like, they're huge.
Yeah, they're burrito-sized.
Yeah,
and they're not supposed to be, right?
No, they're supposed to be, like, smaller than an Apple mouse, you know?
Mm.
Like, they're little guys, and they're good.
I want to be tamale friends with someone. That's the best. You get invited over for it, and then yours is the kitchen that's not totally bombed out at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to go home to a clean kitchen.
It's like being a Gentile that gets invited to a Passover Seder. Like, I get to go, like, experience your culture for a night, but also, like, this didn't impact me at all from a mess standpoint.
That's great.
Yeah.
So the Defiant's course is the Cardassian border. And that really heightens the tension, because...
Warp, I mean, not 9, but let's say 7.
Yeah.
Why warp 7? Why ever not 9?
Why are they prescribing to the warp speed limit at this point? If you're a terrorist, you should observe no speed limit.
Yeah, I guess they're like eco-terrorists, maybe. They're like, well, we can't contribute to galactic global warming or whatever.
I mean, I want to destroy the Cardassians, but I'm not a monster.
So there's a big, like, war room set in Cardassia, and this is like a big room with a bunch of big screens, big board. There's an Obsidian Order lady there.
Allow me to introduce Coronis, our observer from the Obsidian Order.
She's kind of initially there to kind of lock it down from a operational security standpoint. Like, Sisko being in the room means they need to keep their tactical readouts on kind of a limited basis so that he doesn't oversee something he shouldn't oversee.
She's got that Obsidian Order stink on her, which makes her someone that even Dukat kind of fears in an interesting way. Like, when you've got Dukat obeying the orders of someone else, you're in rare air.
Right. She also has kind of the kind of haircut that Scott Adams would draw on a character in Dilbert.
I thought she looked a lot like Tina Fey to me.
Oh, shit.
Do you know who she is, Ben?
Who is she?
She is Trisha O'Neill. She played Captain Garrett in the Enterprise C episode.
Whoa!
You can see it now, can't you?
Damn, yeah.
She looks so familiar to me, I had to look it up. But yeah, it's her. It's her under the loaf.
Oh, man. I'm just looking on the known for... On IMDb.
Uh-huh.
Airwolf, 1984.
Yes.
What was she, an airwolf?
Have to ask Bill Tilly. Great actor. I like her work here. This is one of the scenes of many, Ben, where we get the Pac-Manification of the conflict instead of seeing torpedoes and phasers and ship-to-ship combat, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean... I guess this set must cost a lot to build, and I guess, like, having a bunch of extras and specifically paying Frakes to come in and reprise his role, this is probably an expensive episode to do, so I guess I can kind of see why you cut back on the number of ship-to-ship combat shots.
I was really upset by their absence. But I thought about it a little bit longer, Ben, and I was thinking about if you've got 44 minutes to do an ep, it's not just cutting from the war room to the ship-to-ship combat. You need that transition, that intermediate scene
right
between the war room and that shot, which means you got to go back to the Defiant, take your 10 to 20 seconds there, then we see the exterior conflict, and then we cut back to the Defiant. Like, it takes a lot of time to do those sequences, and I wonder, it doesn't look like they have the effects in the bag anyway to do it, but I wonder if they cut for time that element of combat in order to keep the story moving.
There is an efficiency in a 3-second cut to blips on a screen, and there is a certain ratcheting of tension in that. I mean, they do that in Red October. Like, what's this ship over here off by the Grand Banks, you know? Like, what's this guy doing? And that's exactly what they're doing here, right? They're looking at the big board, identifying ships and think, saying like, oh, we're pretty sure this is the Defiant, and Sisko saying like, the readouts are close, but they're not a dead ringer. I think that they're trying to fool you into thinking that that's the Defiant, while in fact the Defiant is somewhere else, and this is just happening to trick you guys.
Sisko does so well in this scene that Obsidian Order Carinus is like, oh, it's too bad we don't have anyone as competent as you around here, and like kind of looks askance at Dukat.
Yeah.
Like, one of the many ball shots that Dukat takes in this episode.
I only wish we had someone with such keen tactical instincts.
Why are they defanging him in this way? Like, does it feel good to tear down the bad guy?
I think it's that whatever happens to Dukat in this episode does not undercut his danger as a character going forward. He's not going to stop being a gull.
Like, we just need to see this so we can understand that Carinus is the big dog on the scene, yes?
It's to establish her power, but it's also embarrass Dukat is like so... Like, Marco Lemo knows how to play that so well, and we saw that a little bit in the... In the station is on lockdown with the security protocol episode, like him getting caught with his pants down in that episode was so funny and awesome that it's like, wow, like how can we write that into another thing?
Morn,
sweet
morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn,
stop. Hammer time.
This scene is basically there to illustrate that what the Maquis are doing with the Defiant is extremely destructive to Cardassian materiel. Like, two different outposts get destroyed. And also to illustrate that the Defiant is using the cloaking device that's on board. They don't need a Romulan to come plug a USB key into the system to get it to work.
How about that?
Yeah. Which, I love that question was sort of posed to us. Mm-hmm. In a previous episode, and it's not long after that they're following up on that.
I also like that that Kira is not comfortable just staying in her quarters like a kept person. Like, she goes up to the replicator and starts crossing some wires.
Yeah.
She flings her sabot into the gears bin.
Hence the word sabotage.
This distraction that she creates in her quarters gives us one of the great memories of TNG that you and I have are the many Riker squints to commercial.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it. They give him a couple of those in this ep, like just for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah.
Like, I was really grateful that they did that.
It was nice to see the banger gets dropped on the ship. And it's like, I think I know what's going on. Squint, fade to black. Amazing.
Just gold. Just the best. This is like batting practice to him.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I guess whatever Kira did caused a fairly massive explosion in the room that they were keeping her in, because she goes to a pretty torn up uniform look for the rest of the episode. She's got a lot of shoulder showing.
For being proximate to an explosion, like, she's not looking... Her uniform took the brunt of it, strangely.
Yeah, I wondered, like, is there actually anything that could happen that would burn that much uniform away, but also leave the skin underneath basically perfectly intact?
I don't know.
Or did they, like, spray one of those healing, you know, they point one of those healing beams at her?
They put some head on it?
Yeah, applied directly to the plasma burn. So this kind of stalls the Defiant in space while they patch things up, and we cut to the war room where Sisko is like, why have they stopped? Like, why are they not just marauding around killing every target of opportunity they can find? And he's trying to puzzle through it and kind of gets distracted by Gul Dukat sitting there like bumming out about missing his son's 11th birthday.
And that's sad.
Sisko tries to really connect with Dukat in this moment and hugely misses the mark.
At that age, they never understand, do they?
Because he's trying to build a bridge between them and say, like, man, like, we're two career-driven dudes. Sometimes we miss those moments in our kids' lives, and kids just don't understand. And Gul Dukat's like, no, he understands. He understands that humans are killing Cardassians, and it will make him as racist as me eventually. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, asshole.
Pretty dark.
Yeah. How are you raising this kid, Gul Dukat? Jesus.
I mean, if Dukat is supposed to be Star Trek Hitler, then why spend any time trying to humanize him? And why give Sisko an opportunity to like form a bond with him?
Why not just have him rant about vegetarian food and move on from there?
I love my characters being multifaceted and not being all the way good and all the way evil, but this trend of pussycatting Dukat, I can't get with it right now. Evil him up a little bit.
I mean, he's pretty evil, saying he's raising his son to be a racist. And I think the scene is more about that thing we were talking about earlier, where Sisko's always like coming from a perspective of like, I want to do the right thing and I want us to build together toward mutual understanding. And the Cardassians are like 1,000% distrustful of that kind of talking 1,000% of the time.
Yeah.
We also get a pretty interesting dialogue between Tom and Kira about what he is doing here. And Kira comes from a standpoint of, I used to be a terrorist. Like, third thing on my resume is terrorist.
First thing is, used to wear my hair a little bit differently back then.
And you are, like 3 days into your new job as terrorist, and I have some thoughts. I don't think you're doing a great job.
She's giving him the yearly job review.
Yeah, yeah. Points where you're doing well and points where you could be improving, you know?
Needs improvement? Like being an actual terrorist. You're a little soft.
You're really not cut out for this, are you?
You're not using the Defiant to kill every target of opportunity. You're not using it to destroy the most potential Cardassian material you can. And he's saying, like, no, like, this is a mission. Like, we have a higher goal, we're working strategically here.
Tom Riker's like, what do you know about chemtrails? Because I know where they're coming from, man. You just don't get it. Like, the look on Kira's face when Tom Riker lays this shit on her is like, what the fuck? You're going to take this ship there on a hunch? It's a great moment.
Like, the reason he is there with the Defiant and the information that the Maquis are working with is that there is an element of the Cardassian system building an invasion fleet to take back everything that they ceded to the Federation in this peace treaty. Like, there's just as much dislike of the peace treaty on the Cardassian side as there is on the Federation side, and they want to solve that problem, and it's called the Orias system.
Tom Riker hands Kira a book written by Cal Hudson, mm-hmm. like called Dianetics or something. Like, I really think you'll appreciate some of the ideas in this book.
It's changed my life.
Like, these are all Cal Hudson style arguments, and yet there's no references to Cal Hudson.
I wish there were more references to Cal Hudson.
Cal Hudson was in this episode.
Yeah. That would have been
dope. You can't have low badge against low badge on that bridge, though.
Do you think Cal Hudson would have had, like, higher Maquis rank than Tom Riker? Because Tom Riker is a lieutenant, right?
Yes.
He's not actually a commander.
No.
So
are those ranks transferable?
Yeah, well, that's a question, right? Like, do the Maquis honor the what you have earned in your previous work experience?
I would only want to be a Maquis if I was given a promotion in doing so.
Like, a lateral move minimum, but a promotion would be ideal.
Sure. <know? laughs>
Like, I'm down for the cause or whatever, but I don't want to give up my my salary and benefits.
I mean, what are we really talking about here?
So, yeah, like, it's about this time that, like, this starts to seep out in the war room also. Like, Dukat is like, why are they heading to the Arias system? That's stupid. There's nothing there. And the Obsidian Order lady is like,
that sector is under direct control of the Obsidian Order, and you will not enter it.
You just let them go there if that's where they're going, and don't fucking, and don't try and cross me on this, because I'm pissed.
It's another quarter in the ball-kicking machine for Dukat. Because he's like,
why?
It's under the control of the Obsidian Order, Ben.
Yeah, and she's like, he's trying to like pull rank and say like, I have tactical command from the Central Command, and like the Central Command is the top thing. And she says, you know, do whatever you want, but like any ship you send to that system will be destroyed. And that's the Obsidian Order's final word on that.
You really want to do this here now? Okay, let's do it.
Back on the Defiant, Kira is really manipulating Tom Riker, and part of her argument feels like it could be grounds for an intermediate episode that we don't get. Like, this idea that Tom Riker seeks to distinguish himself from Will Riker, has an axe to grind still, was a guy who was unhappy in his post-duplicate deployment. You know, after he was saved, they sent him to a ship, and I guess, like, they describe it really fun on the show. It's like,
while he was there, he began to express certain political opinions. Opinions that supported the Maquis and their goals.
I wish we got a Tom Riker bottle episode where, like, we could really figure out what's in his head, because this idea that Kira, in her brief time with Tom, could see that, like, he's a man who does not, who resents the comparison and is willing to go on a suicide mission to distinguish himself fully from Will is like a super great call by Kira, but kind of an unearned bit of psychology.
I think that the only thing that makes it work for me is the extent to which Commander Riker in the episode where the existence of Tom Riker is revealed felt exactly the same way. Like every time they interact, it is Commander Riker seeing only the parts of himself that he dislikes in Tom Riker and railing against that. And to put yourself in the shoes of the guy that has to then go on living like with a lesser rank, doing less fun and cool shit all the time, you know, and just live in the shadow of the fucking first officer of the flagship for the rest of his life, despite for all intents and purposes being the same guy, I can see why he would have an axe to grind, and it would be pretty surprising if he didn't kind of resent that character. Yeah.
It's like being co-host on a show with the great Benjamin R. Harrison. The beloved Benjamin R. Harrison.
Oh,
sometimes it's hard to just be Adam Pranica.
You're describing how I feel, Adam. And for that, I hate you. No, I mean, yeah, it's that comparing oneself to the other thing always happens.
Tom Riker in this scene doesn't really have an answer for that. I feel like Kira challenges him ably, but he doesn't come down, like he does not admit it. He just sort of notes it.
Yeah. So what it comes down to is it's a lot like the Hunt for Red October, where the dogs are running the prey to the hunters.
Yeah.
And the fleet of like normal Cardassian military are chasing the Defiant, and a lot of ships are coming out of this secret star system where the secret invasion fleet is being developed. And we finally do get to see some ship-to-ship combat stuff. They saved their budget for this big finale. It's some pretty heavy shit.
There are 5 ships out there ahead of you, but there may be 50 waiting there for all we know.
And Sisko basically does some horse trading with Dukat on how we can arrange for this to resolve in a peaceful way that doesn't result in everybody dying. And the idea basically is like the Defiant and the crew can go back to the Federation, and you know the Maquis will stand trial there, but Riker will have to be turned over to the Cardassians, and that's the deal that they strike.
Yeah, the idea that these sensor logs on Arias is like of a value that supersedes the ship.
Right, like the
incredible.
What the Defiant has discovered just by traveling to this star system is valuable enough to Dukat and the Central Command and like the non-Obsidian Order part of the Cardassian body politic, that's as much a bargaining chip as anything else, like the lives, the ship, Kira, anything.
Yeah, it's so major. As a viewer, you understand the value because it's hard to believe anything could be more valuable than the capture and teardown of the Defiant.
Right. And like, if the Maquis got, like, they got some intelligence that there is an invasion force being built and they're taking kind of a long shot, like, let's steal the nastiest warship we can steal and head over there and just like do as much damage as we can. At a certain point, Sisko and Dukat get on FaceTime with Tom Riker and kind of break this deal to him, and he's, you know, he thinks it over a little bit and then accepts. Like, I was kind of surprised that the rest of the Maquis crew weren't like, wait a second, we all kind of put a lot on the line to come do this. Like, this was kind of a suicide run for us. So
yeah.
I think, like, cutting deals right now is not really what we're here to do.
Yeah, I mean, they've spent the latter part of their careers avoiding a Federation prison that they are now contractually obligated to go to now because of Tom Riker's decision.
I think maybe the idea that like one of them would have just phasered him and just like continued the mission is probably like the realistic version of what would happen.
I feel like we've seen that in an episode before where you think you're out of the woods, but there's someone who isn't on the same team.
Yeah.
And they attempt to ruin it at the end.
Kill Walter.
Something escape. Now that's convincing for both.
The other thing that I thought was a little sad about this this last scene is like we're talking about like brand new, like fresh off the production line Cardassian ships coming out of the Araya system, and like they're talking about them, right? They're going like this is, they're not Galore class, they're some other class, and they're like, these are like moving faster than this class has ever moved, like they are really kicking ass right now, and they are just the exact same Cardassian ship model we've always seen, which I think if you're going to say that they're a different class, you got to make a different model.
Yeah.
You know?
But they did not.
Yeah. And then you got the model. You can use it for a bunch of other shit in the future, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like the Cardassians are going anywhere.
You think it's weird that the Cardassian ships look like the symbol for Cardassia in a way that no other alien race chooses to do?
I do think that's a little weird.
This idea of what might or might not be going on in the Araya system is a question left medium answered, I guess. I mean, the ships sure prove that something strange is happening there, but we don't get to know for sure because the button on the episode is the Bridge of the Defiant, where Tom Riker makes Kira promise to give his Maquis crew a fair trial. Like, Kira's like, okay, like we kind of have a ton of proof that they helped you steal this ship for many episodes. And then Kira says something really questionable and totally, again, like unregarded. She says, we're going to get you out of there before Tom Riker beams away. Like, what? Really? Was Tom Riker given the whole, like, you know, you got to transport yourself over to the Cardassian ship and you're going to be put on trial and you're going to go to prison, but we're going to give you the Star Trek VI treatment and like try to bust you out later?
She does not take their makeout for an opportunity to put a Viridian patch on his back.
Boy, Tom Riker takes one for the road, huh?
Yeah.
Pretty great.
He just lays one on her. Like lays one on her to the extent that when she goes and like plops herself down in the captain's seat, she is like fully like smoking a cigarette. Like, was it good for you?
If it's anyone besides Jonathan Frakes and a Riker doing this, I feel like this would be fucked up. But I think it's not. Because of the power of John Frakes' charisma and the cult of Riker personality, he gets away with it, and it's not gross or lurid or whatever. Like,
I mean, I think it's also good that they established that she's like interested in him from that standpoint early on.
They got to know each other. God, like such a plum. Like, he's so great.
A lot of fun.
Did you like the episode?
I liked it a lot. I think the flaws are fairly well laid bare by our episode.
By our good and noble work.
Yeah, it's just a nice, comfortable bathrobe to put on after a hot shower to see Jonathan Frakes just fucking cutting it up, you know? Like,
just like old times.
Like breaking girls' hearts and fucking whooping Cardassian ass in this episode. Really fun. How about yourself, Adam?
This is the first episode of Deep Space Nine so far that I feel like I could say I would rewatch over and over again in a way that I rewatch TNG.
Wow.
That's not to say that it's the best episode, because I think many of the episodes that you and I rewatch on TNG are not considered right. The best. But they are like that bathrobe you speak of, like so comfortable and fun and good that they're just irresistible. And this is one of those irresistible episodes. And I think it's the first one on DS9 that I've seen that I could say that about. Like, it is a little unfortunate that it's because of a character that does not belong there. But I think that just speaks to how indomitable a Riker is in any episode and in any moment. He's just, whether it's Will or Tom, they're cut from the same rope, Ben.
Yeah.
They're amazing guys.
Yeah. Good guys.
Good guys, phone app. What do you say you lay one of those priority one messages on me, Ben?
I'm getting my priority one message lips ready for you, buddy.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a commercial nature.
What?
It asks all viewers everywhere to join the greatest parents on Facebook.
Whoa.
The message goes like this. Friends of DeSoto, do you share your uterus with an ankylosaur? Quarters with a slick back? Your life with the boy? Or other small humans? If you answer queries like, where do babies come from? Or lose sleep to cries from Orcach? There is a community for you. For silly topics, red alerts, or distractions from your little warriors, beam over to The Greatest Parents, a Friends of DeSoto Facebook group. Adam and Ben, for the kids, please have young Picard and Kevin Uxbridge explain where babies come from.
When a captain loves a doctor very much, they hug and kiss.
I take the raw materials of the Hooshnock, and then I squeeze them in my two hands in a bowl.
God.
And then presto, baby. I could do this whenever I want to. It's actually fairly simple.
I want to see it now. No.
I don't think it should be a surprise to anyone that I'm not a big fan of kids. My interests skew much older. You know Mini Picard?
Yes?
I could snap my fingers and send you a long, long way from here.
Could you snap your fingers and make the computer in the children's playroom access the engineering section?
You see, the thing about me is I'm very bad at computers.
All old people are.
So yeah, join the Greatest Parents on Facebook, of course. Even famously, Ben, you and I are not parents, so we would have no business going there. But if you have a little one or are thinking about it, these people are probably just as supportive friends of DeSoto in this regard as they are in any other. So
I love the rich tapestry that is all of the different groups of friends of DeSoto. Like the self-organizing around LGBTQ and cooking and parenting. Like, it's so cool.
It's pretty great. A group for every kind.
I love it. Adam, our next priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Commander Oliver of the USS Caligari, and it is to Commander Graves of the USS Ardmore. I feel like we've heard from the USS Caligari. Have we heard from the Ardmore before?
Yeah, that is a name that's unfamiliar to me.
That might be a new one. Adam, I think you're probably going to feel best editing this if you drop a beat right in here, because this looks to be a bit of lyricism. This rap battle coming at you hard and fierce. My rhymes through your shields will pierce. I got a couple words to say to you spicily. Listen up so you hear me precisely. You're so nice, not just lyrically, someone to look up to. I know this empirically. Too good at games, it must be an anomaly. You're the best friend, not ironically.
Oh.
Fresh.
Oh, look at you crossing your arms over there.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
As I sit here in my b-boy stance with flip-flops and socks and sweatpants, I'm finna enhance your priority one message.
That's great.
That was a lot of fun. Good to hear from Commander Oliver and the USS Caligari. Yeah. Well, if you'd like to share your science with the Friends of DeSoto, you head over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where a personal message is $100 and a commercial message is $200. They help us create this show, and they help you get your message out there to tens of thousands of Friends of DeSoto. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I so want to give Tom Riker, like, an honorary Shimoda. Mm-hmm. In the same way that we, like, doubled up on Cal Hudson, like, to pad the statistics for him. But there is a moment in this ep that is so Shimoda-esque.
Yeah.
That it actually overpowers that feeling for me. It's a video Shimoda, Ben.
Mm.
If you scrub to approximately 37 minutes and 40 seconds, there's a scene in the war room that depicts an uncomfortable moment between Sisko and Dukat.
Yeah.
Where there's like a look and then a look away, and then they look at each other, and then Dukat looks away. It is a hilarious 10 seconds of only facial acting.
Yeah.
That I watched many times and got a kick out of every single time. I loved it.
That is a lot of fun.
So if it's not honorary Tom Riker, it's this. But if we're keeping score, I think I would have to choose this one, unfortunately.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Mine is Sisko. It's another scene in the war room a little earlier than this. Like, Sisko is not necessarily like a rule follower, but he does have a real sense of justice in his head. And the idea comes across that the Obsidian Order have kind of broken the rules in building a fleet. Like, they are not supposed to be building a fleet. They're not supposed to have ships at all. And at some point, like, the fact that they are building ships becomes plain. And Sisko is outraged. As though he has a stake in, like, the fucking way the Cardassians run their own government.
Right.
And I just thought it was so funny. Like, he's, like, smacking his hand against computer panels. Like, they're not even supposed to be building ships. And I love the idea that Sisko is, like, just so dedicated to the rules of the game in some ways. Like, not in others, but in some ways, he's dedicated to the rules of the game to the extent that he is outraged that the Obsidian Order has built a fleet.
I wonder if his outrage is strategic in such a way that it helps. Like, to whatever degree there is a rift between Carinus and Dukat, like, that only benefits Sisko, right?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if that's a way for him to amplify that.
He's kind of
conflict.
Fanning the flames of the yeah. differences between them.
Yeah, that's some headcanon.
Yeah.
I like that scene a lot, though.
It's very fun.
I like it when Avery Brooks acts big, yeah. You know? He's good.
Nobody's better at acting big than him.
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that gold press latch.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I
right? Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and It's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
I'm going to act like I want to believe that the next episode's going to be as good as this, Ben, even though it couldn't possibly because there is no Jonathan Frakes in it. You want to figure out what ep we're watching and how we will watch it?
The next episode is Season 3, Episode 10, Fascination, described by one prominent internet streaming service in the following way. The Bajoran Gratitude Festival, an annual celebration, is about to get underway, and both Kira and O'Brien await the arrival of their loves. Hmm. Another streaming platform describes it as a Bajoran celebration on the station serves as the backdrop for an epidemic of inexplicable romantic attractions among the crew.
Well, this is going to be one of those Naked Now apps, isn't it?
That's kind of what I'm anticipating, Adam.
Why is that a thing?
I don't know, man.
Someone saw the Naked episodes and were like, these are so good, we got to make them a regular thing. That person was wrong. Dead wrong.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Well, Ben, we're on square 15, which, as you've heard, is a plain Jane yet great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Just ahead, couple squares ahead is a Quark's bar, and then several squares ahead of that is a Naked Now square. I think that's the only thing in range. A couple squares beyond that is a wormhole that then takes us back down to the Traveler square, which is a square that moves the run about five spaces forward. So,
I think you have the roll since it's a UEP.
Okay. I have rolled a 4.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
And that means we have gone 1, 2, 3, 4. We have jumped the Quark's bar. We are into square 19, just two squares away from that space butthole. And another great, great regular episode for you and me.
All right, man. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Meantime, Folks can go online, use the hashtag GreatestGen to talk about the episode. On Twitter, Adam is at Cut for Time. I'm at Benjamin R. There's also a multitude of Facebook groups to join. There's also a Reddit sub. There's a Wikia all about our dumb show where all of the jokes are gone into in detail.
You can even find the rules of Greatest Gen there.
Yeah, I was recently delighted to learn that that our prescriptions regarding leaning back chairs and leaving parties without saying goodbye have been put down indelibly on the internet.
Most of the internet put downs take the form of something else.
Yeah, we got to thank our buddy Adam Ragusea, who makes the theme music for our show based on the amazing work of Dark Materia, who made the original theme music for our show. Got to thank our card daddy, Bill Tilly, who makes a trading card set for each episode of the show. Always makes me laugh. Every single week, I get an out loud laugh from what Bill Tilly does with those trading cards. So definitely go find those online.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which makes out with people that you wouldn't necessarily choose for them. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Make it so. Make it so.
Jean-Luc Picard. Speaking of dumps, did you see that drink that Ducat was drinking?
During the McLaughlin group?
Yeah, it's one of these like big, tall, twisty bottles, and he's pouring himself some of it, but it seeps down the sides of the glass like it's just maple syrup.
Oh, I mean, like, is that
I think he might be drinking Coke thick.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.